This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kelms. With me at the Carver Center for Public Radio is Pastor Clint Schneckloth, the lead pastor at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Fayetteville. Welcome back.
Thank you.
This is your time of year, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Cool Love temperatures.
It.
And
when's it going to snow? I'm so excited.
You know, the forecasts I've seen suggest that we'll have more snow than last year, but then that's a low bar.
Yeah, there wasn't any last year, was there?
Didn't we get a dusting at one point?
I feel like we did, but there was no sledding down our hill last year, which was depressing.
Well, to each their own.
Right.
I have the countdown going to baseball season, even as we speak. Let's start with one word today, and you tell me what that means, and we'll go from there. Sanctuary.
Well, it's a great word, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's a comforting word.
It's a comforting word. Of course, when we use it at church, it typically refers to one room in the building, and it's the central place around which everybody kind of gathers and makes plans, and that's like the worship space. And so because churches have a sanctuary, there's developed over time, and I don't know, I really don't know to what degree this comes out of a more generalized human sense of, like, if there's a sacred space, then there's special rules around the sacred space. But there's a concept in the Christian tradition more broadly of what you might call sanctuary, not meaning a building, but providing all the accoutrements that come along with what you think takes place in a sanctuary. Obviously, there's the space for meditation, prayer, worship, all those kinds of things. But also what you assume is protection.
Yes.
Safety. The church, because it has sanctuaries, has historically, over time, also used sanctuary in a bigger, like, cultural or even political way. The most famous sanctuary movement in the United States was in the 80s.
1980s.
Yeah, there have been other times in bigger historical perspective where churches would provide sanctuary for people groups, or even, like, historically what it used to be is it would be a safe haven even for criminals.
Right.
So all the way back into the Old Testament. If you could get there, then you were protected under these rules of sanctuary. And then you could stay there while the legal system of the time was that would be working out. Like, maybe you were supposed to be condemned to death, but because you were in the sanctuary, then they had to pursue a legal process to prove it before they could execute you or something, and you could stay there through that time. I don't know of anybody really using sanctuaries in that way in the United States, but in the 80s, there was a sanctuary movement that got started because in the 80s, there were some very violent regimes in Central America that were disappearing people. And so a lot of Central Americans were fleeing to the United States, seeking asylum. And when they would get here, our practices of that time were to not attend to the real risk of to real lives from deportation, and we were sending people back. And there was, like, at least 100 confirmed cases of where we sent somebody back to one of those countries in Central America, and they were disappeared or killed by the government. And so these were real legitimate claims. People were showing up at the United States. They would be seeking refuge. They're refugees or asylum seekers. They were afraid that the United States was going to deport them. And some churches started to become aware that this was happening. And so then some of those churches started publicly stating, we will be this, like, this church is a sanctuary. And there was literally a couple of churches, a Unitarian church and a Presbyterian church down in Arizona at that time, that put signs out in their yards and said, we are a sanctuary church and we'll provide sanctuary. And then over time, that developed as a movement. At its height in the 80s, over 500 churches around the United States were sanctuary churches, and they provided shelter and refuge for Central American asylum seekers, sometimes even at legal cost. So there were some pastors who were arrested and jailed for providing sanctuary to sanctuary seekers.
And do you know if this crossed many denominations?
It crossed, like, a lot of the denominations, yeah. The biggest stewards of it in that period were the Presbyterians and the Unitarians, but there were, you know, UCC and Lutheran, Episcopal, even, I don't know, it's probably even broader than that, mm-hmm. Roman Catholic parishes. Mm-hmm. Later, the one that I know the most about, because it was a very powerful story in the area where I grew up, was there was a new sanctuary movement that was started in 2007. And it kind of was centered in, or one of the most famous stories is in Postville, Iowa.
Postville, Iowa.
Uh-huh. There was a meatpacking plant, or a couple meatpacking plants in Postville, Iowa, that were actually Hasidic Jewish meatpacking plants. They were preparing kosher meats, and the majority of the employees in those meatpacking plants were undocumented workers. And there was a huge ICE raid in Postville in 2007. A whole bunch of undocumented workers were grabbed in this big roundup, and then the ones who hadn't been grabbed yet and their families started either fleeing the packing plants or even fleeing their homes, because it was a small town, Iowa, so they were going all over. And two of the churches in town, people fled to those churches, St. Pius, the Roman Catholic parish, and then the Lutheran parish in town. And those churches ended up housing some sanctuary seekers for weeks. And while they worked out all the details of it, and that was the birth of what is sometimes called the New Sanctuary Movement. It's been made more complicated by, you know, so between 1980 and 2007, you have Homeland Security has shifted who and what and how deportation and all of those kinds of things are enacted and enforced. And then also just the will of congregations, would we be, you know, committed to that?
Especially if you're looking at potential legal and financial ramifications.
Right. So that's what it boils down to. There's end up being these interesting ethical questions. So, like, one ethical question is, as a church, as a sanctuary, would we use our church in that way? You know, that's like one question. If you had somebody show up at your church at the door and said, "I seek sanctuary," what would you do as a congregation? Are you ready for that question? Have you had a conversation about how you would be ready for that question? Those are all kinds of interesting things. And what's the process for somebody seeking sanctuary? And I think a lot of churches should be challenged. I would love it if people are listening to this. I would love it if more churches would have that conversation and figure out how to be publicly available as sanctuary, because I think it's always going to be a potential need. Then there's the question of what will the state actually do?
I was going to say that the relationship between, because I don't think there is any, you know, 1930s and 40s movies aside, I don't think there's any legal reason that I can't, if I'm some sort of enforcement officer, come in and take someone who I believe has broken the law
right.
from your church.
So this is where this gets really fascinating. So I pulled it up. U.S. Customs and Border Protection has a document on their website, on the official website of the Department of Homeland Security, about sensitive locations.
Interesting.
Yes. And then they have guidelines for their officers on how to deal with quote-unquote sensitive locations. It's pretty interesting. It's a Q&A. What do the Department of Homeland Security policies require for enforcement actions to be carried out at sensitive locations? And this is their answer. The policies provide that enforcement actions at or focused on sensitive locations such as schools, places of worship, and hospitals should generally be avoided, and that such actions may only take place when A, prior approval is obtained from an appropriate supervisory official, or B, there are exigent circumstances necessitating immediate action without supervisor approval. So it really is the case by law and in the actual very public policy documents of Homeland Security that certain places are defined by Homeland Security as sanctuary. I mean, they call them sensitive locations, right. But I think from their perspective, that's what they need to call them, you know. So if we had people in our community who needed sanctuary, they'd be more protected in a church or a school or
hospital.
A hospital than they would in your home or a business or some other place like that.
Well, I mean, and strictly from a PR standpoint, it doesn't ever look good if law enforcement agencies go into one of these sensitive places to pull someone out.
Well, that's
it may be necessary at times, but it's not a good visual.
No, and I think that's probably the other reason why they call them sensitive locations. It's like they don't want the optics of the of
right.
It. Yeah. The people I know who are working with immigrants right now in 2017, people who had DACA, mm-hmm. for example, mm-hmm. and are now
coming
to the end or in limbo,
right.
are raising these questions again. We have real reports that Homeland Security has increased enforcement all over the country, including in Arkansas. I have a parishioner who was apprehended because our county has 287G in place. And so when he was picked up for something else, then he was put into ICE custody, and I've had to drive down to Louisiana to visit him. Mm. So it's like literally right here. This is not some kind of abstraction. And if you go talk to people who work with immigrants, it's a real question. And when I've asked immigrant advocates why we haven't had anybody go into sanctuary yet, it's because people who are probably about ready to need to seek sanctuary don't know who they can go to. Because like those churches in the 80s who put signs out and said, we are a sanctuary church, you can seek sanctuary here, they need to know that a church would put them up and provide them with shelter.
Do you think, I mean, we're talking 30 years difference, and I don't, even though I would have been in my 20s in the 1980s, I don't remember that movement that much. Do you think it would be far more political now in 2017 than it might have been in the mid-80s?
Well, I think it's always hard. I don't think so. It was okay. Super hard in 2007 when those churches in Postville had to do that. They took a lot of, you know, because really what you end up doing if you be a sanctuary church is you are then participating in the vulnerability of the sanctuary seeker with them.
Mm-hmm.
You're really making yourself vulnerable too. And it's always political to make yourself vulnerable. You know, churches are going to fight over that. They're going to wonder whether they should commit to that kind of action. And people are generally speaking, law-abiding, want to obey authority, mm-hmm. you know. And so they're going to struggle with taking any actions that seem to go against the overall authority. The new sanctuary movement now is also finding ways to help congregations or faith communities help provide sanctuary that's not necessarily just providing the physical space. So another way that you can provide sanctuary, and we've actually had a couple of events in Northwest Arkansas that are like this, where when they know there's going to be a deportation hearing or something, to get a lot of people there. So there was famously a pastor, Amanda, up in Bentonville, who had to go in for a deportation hearing. And she's a pastor of a primarily Latina Nazarene congregation. And they just got a lot of people to go. And having a lot of people there at the deportation hearing probably had a very positive impact on the outcome.
So sanctuary does not have to necessarily be a physical three-dimensional place.
No.
It can be a mood, an environment.
That's right. And if you talk to people who are immigrant and refugee advocates, they'll tell you the outcome for keeping somebody here versus being deported is usually not related to how good of a lawyer they got, but because of the community that was around them. If they're alone and vulnerable, they're more likely to be deported. If they've got a community of support who's saying, this person is an integral part of our community, they're one of us, then they're more likely to be safe and be able to stay.
You know, we began this conversation by mutually agreeing that sanctuary is a warm, wonderful word. But in 2017, it's not. You can turn on AM radio or cable news, and you'll hear sanctuary used not as a warm word. I'm thinking about the use of sanctuary city and how has become a political, a loaded term.
Yeah.
So even that word doesn't necessarily always right now mean the same thing to every listener.
It doesn't. But as a Christian who reads his Bible, it ought to have more of the sense that I've been talking about in this episode.
Pastor Clint Schneckloth is the lead pastor of Good Shepherd Lutheran Church of Fayetteville. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.